I've been in that so toxic of a relationship where, like, when you're going through each other's phone, there's no relationship. Like, if you feel like you've got to go through each other's phone, there's no trust, there's no relationship. Like, it's pointless. And it's horrible to try to keep going. Like, one person's accusing the other one. Well, you know, the one that's pointing the fingers is generally the one cheating, you know?
Hello, 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 and welcome to Situations Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Michael Williams, aka Shiny Dude. You can call me Sean, Shiny Dude. Does not matter to me. I'm just glad that y'all are here. And I have a very special guest here. This guest, he has quite the story. He's an author, a former Marine Corps. I got so much that we want to unpack here. He has quite the resume, quite the bio. So yeah, let me just like jump right on into it. So, you know, please welcome, you know, our next guest onto the show, Henry Theodore Friedenberger III, a man of resilience, transformation, profound courage. So Henry's journey is nothing short of inspirational, having dedicated 13 years of his life into the Marine Corps, including 4 intense years with special operations. His story takes us through the highs and lows of, you know, military service, including the heart-wrenching experience of losing 2 best friends to suicide. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's definitely a story that was, you know, poignantly captured in a Wall Street Journal video. So yeah, that's just so deep. So you know, Henry's originally from Rocky Ford, Colorado. So he now resides in La Junta, where he continues to write his remarkable story. Love that. So he authored this book called 10 Rules to Succeed Like a Marine. And he's diligently working on his third publication, a 365-day Christian recovery devotional, while his second book is in its final stages. So Henry's personal journey of recovery comes from alcohol, marijuana, meth, and sex addiction, and as well as a testament to his strength and determination. So he's about to embark on a new chapter as a peer counselor, drawing on his experiences to guide others on their paths to recovery. That's just amazing. And additionally, you know, Henry, he's nearing the completion of his second bachelor's degree in religion, adding to his previous degree in business administration. So outside of all of this, like his academics and his professional pursuits, Henry, he runs a Mighty Miracles Men's LLC. So this is a seasonal lawn aeration business. So showcasing his entrepreneurial spirit, love that. And so he's involved with Project Healing Waters, further highlights his commitment to healing and the community service. He's just doing so much for his community. We love that over here. So join us as Henry shares more about his incredible journey, the lessons he learned along the way, and yeah, how he's using his experiences. Okay. Like, we love that. So using all of his experiences, especially, you know, to inspire and support others in their battles. So we love somebody who can, you know, who can take like such a pass and bring that as a positive light to affect others. So, you know, without further ado, y'all, please give a very, 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 very warm welcome to my guest, Henry Friedenberger III.
Thank you. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you for having me on. It's a blessing.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have quite the resume, and I'm just so excited to unpack, you know, your story. And, you know, talk a little bit about dating and relationships. You ready to do all that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Love it. So for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, this podcast is about dating, relationships, mental and emotional life experiences. Ooh, fucking we. Like, we get really deep into it. We talk about so much. Yeah. And, you know, we all go through stuff. And whenever listeners submit your stories, whenever you all out there submit your, whatever it is that you're going through, it's all anonymous. You know, I don't know, like, who submitted what. Henry won't know who submitted what. It's an anonymous form. So submit your stories, your questions to situationspodcast.com/submit. All right. And yeah, join the Patreon for bonus content as well. We do dating app makeovers. We unpack some screenshots over there. You know, I share some of my dating stories and stuff like that. It's a whole lot of fun over there. So definitely get involved, all of y'all. Yeah, so we're going to be talking about everything that we kind of just discussed in Henry's bio, as well as, you know, highlighting, you know, like his journey about being an author, because I definitely want to learn more about that as well, and how to become an author and so much more. And we're going to be unpacking some Hinge and Unhinge dating app screenshots. So we got it all. So Henry, kind of starting off, whenever I have a guest on the show, my audience, they always want to know, well, what's the current situation with the guest? Like, what is their relationship situation? Like, are they single? Are they, you know, in a marriage relationship? So tell us, where are you in your dating relationship life?
So I would consider myself single, divorced for the third time. So I haven't been the best at relationships, you know, but that's where I'm at.
All right. All right. Well, hey, you never know. The fourth time might be the charm.
Right? If I do it right.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So you know, like, where are you based? Like, so tell us, more about Colorado. Like, you know, so like, are you still in La Junta?
Yeah, I'm in La Junta, Colorado. It's about an hour southeast of Pueblo, Colorado, which is another. It's not too big, but that's probably the closest thing people would be familiar with. 2 hours south of Colorado Springs, 3 hours south of Denver. It's a really rural area. So there's not, the pickings are slim out here, if you want to say that.
All right. That was going to be one of my questions. Like, what is the dating environment like out there?
Yeah, it's the pickings are slim. I mean, most of the people my age, 40 years old, are settled down. But not everybody, you know. I feel like God has a plan for me. If, you know, my sponsor said, stop looking for the right now women and you'll find the right one. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. Okay. So, you know, you're still open to, finding that special someone, right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I am. I would love to, you know, I haven't put it out of my head. I'm a full-time single dad, so that takes up most of my time, and that's the biggest thing in my life, the most important thing in my life right now.
All right. Wow. How many kids do you have?
So I have two, and two that I have full custody of that are 4 and 6, Henry and Sophia, and then McKenna and Gunner. They're out in Guthrie, Oklahoma. They were from California. That's where their mom was, and she just relocated because it's so expensive to live in California. So they're only 7.5 hours away versus 16 like they were before. So hopefully I'll get to see more of them soon.
Wow. Okay. Wow. And so, you know, even like just based in like being in Colorado, so you spent your entire life growing up in Colorado for the most part, right? Besides the deployments and everything that you had when you were in service.
Yeah. So I'm from Rocky Ford. We're famous for watermelons. We're the home of our mascot is the Meloneers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember my dad getting in a fight over it when I was young because they're badass wrestlers, but the mascot's lit. It looks like a watermelon on steroids with big old muscles. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty badass. One of the most unique mascots. But I grew up in, I was born in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then moved to Rocky Ford. But my dad got custody of me, and we moved to Denver starting in first grade, and I stayed there till about seventh grade, and then moved back down the valley after my grandpa passed away.
Wow. Okay. And so what's your favorite thing about, you know, like La Junta? Like, what's your favorite thing about the city life, you know, or even like the town life? Tell me all about it.
Well, it's really rural here. I would say there's probably like 7,000 people in La Junta. Rocky Ford's probably like 3,000 or 4,000. But I'm under contract for a house in Fowler, which is another small town. It's about 30 minutes from here, but it's 30 minutes closer to Pueblo. So I'm under contract for a house. But my favorite thing down here, it's weird because I love being in the Marine Corps in the cities. I loved like the city life in LA and San Diego. I really like that and like being around a lot of people. But now as I'm getting older, it's kind of weird. I feel like I'm turning into my parents, you know, like I kind of like being away, because I lived in Denver not too long ago, and man, it's too chaotic. I like the slower pace. It just not so much craziness. You know, like there's a lot of crazy in this world right now.
Yeah, and so you know, you spent 13 years in the Marine Corps. Like, tell me a little bit about that and kind of like what that all entailed.
Yeah, so I came in. I got in 2003, and right after a year of college, you know, I watched. There's a couple reasons I joined. I always liked Full Metal Jacket. I always wanted to be a Marine. My dad was Air Force, so he told me to join the Air Force. So of course, I rebelled at everything I did. I was going to do the complete opposite. Plus, I had a girlfriend that broke up with me, and she told me I could never be a Marine like her brother. So there was another challenge. So I was like, Roger that. And the third one that like kind of sent me over the edge was, I remember walking home from college and watching the Marines invade Baghdad, and I just dropped to the floor and started doing pushups, and contacted a recruiter and was ready to go. I joined open contract, so they got to pick the job for me. I wanted to be infantry, but they made me supply, so I didn't really like the first 4 years doing that job. I mean, I was good at whatever. Marines are good at whatever they get. We try to be the best at whatever we do. But I moved and changed jobs to a career planner, which is basically like human resources. It's like being a recruiter, but for guys that are already in, you know, interviewing all the guys at certain points of their career, all the enlisted guys, being a liaison between headquarters, Marine Corps, and the commanding officer. So it's a special staff position. Which gave me a lot of autonomy and really able to do what I wanted to do. And I got to go to a lot of different units, the Air Wing, the Infantry, Special Forces for 4 years. So I really enjoyed that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And then also thank you for your service too.
Thank you. Thank you. It was an honor.
And so, you know, sometime around then, so you had like an unexpected separation, and then like the wheels kind of fell off, you know, along like your journey. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this, I guess this could go with part of the dating part too. I never really treated, like the first time I got married, I didn't treat it serious. Same thing with the second time. You know, I went with the mentality of like, we see a lot of Marines like deployed, and their wives would cheat on them, and you'd hear the horror stories or see stuff. You know what I mean? You'd hear vehicles parked out with all their stuff. They spent all the dude's money, and there's a stigma attached to it. So I was like, I'm just gonna be the first one and to do it before them. That's the kind of attitude that I had before them. I used to treat women like that, and I'm grateful I don't do that anymore. But I had gotten married a second time. I had orders to Special Forces out in North Carolina. I went to selection to be an operator. I didn't make selection, but they gave me they cut me orders out there anyways to be the career planner. So she was pregnant. We drove all the way across the country with a six week old pit bull in a box truck. Yeah, don't recommend it. but we started over in North Carolina, and as soon as she had the baby, she got pregnant again, and we had another one. And it was a really busy unit, a lot of training, a lot of special training that we had to do in order to deploy with them, like special schools, like SEER school, survival, evasion, resistance, escape. It's for high risk personnel or pilots, or basically they capture you and you get to do survival training, evade from them, and then play a prisoner of war. It's phenomenal training. You get starved and beat up. It's a good time. It was the best training I've ever been to. But yeah, the wheels fell off. Like my drinking got worse. I drank a lot. The Marine Corps was born in a barn or a bar. So, you know, like we would drink, whether it was Friday night because it's time to go party, or it's like and someone died, we would drink. When someone got promoted, we would drink. It was just, you know, the Marine Corps birthday, we would drink. It was part of our culture. And it was accepted as pretty much as long as you could still, if you were high functioning at your job, it wasn't a big deal, you know, until my life became unmanageable and the wheels started to fall off. I moved in with my friend Chris Goski, and he was a JTAC, Joint Terminal Air Controller. So warheads on foreheads, his job isn't to call it airstrikes. And he had three or four deployments already, rough ones to Iraq and Ramadi, and with special forces. He lost his best friend David Day, the EOD technician, got blown up on Mother's Day, and all they could find was his jawbone. And Chris blamed himself for that. They lost another guy on that team in that deployment in, I think, 2009. Bill Wardowitz. And I did his Silver Star ceremony at the headquarters of Marine Corps. But Chris was struggling, and all the signs of suicide were there. But, you know, and they teach us all that in the Marine Corps. They teach us that. But I was so wrapped up in my own stuff and going through relationship problems with my ex-wife at the time that I wasn't there to support him. I mean, I was there to drink with him and party with him, but even despite the signs, he still succumbed to his, I mean, he took his own life. We got kicked out of his apartment for an incident that happened, and then he was on his own, and I was supposed to be with him that night because I ran into him at the food line, and he asked me to go party with him. I lied to him and told him I was, you know, spending time with my kids, but I was actually going to hang out with this chick. And so there's a lot of survivor's guilt. So because like that night he took his life. And when I deployed to Afghanistan with MARSOC after that, I met his twin brother at the funeral, his identical twin, who was a Green Beret, which was really interesting. You know, like we instantly had that rapport, that camaraderie. Like he became my best friend over the next 4 years. And I deployed, came back, everything, you know, started to kind of fall off. My drinking got worse. I got orders out to California to be closer to my other kids, because my ex-wife got pregnant while I was on deployment and moved to California. And I got orders out there to be closer to them, but I was moving right back into a deploying unit. So we were too busy with workups. I didn't have much time with the kids. My drinking got worse. I would just pretty much stay at work and drink, like stay the night there and just work there all week. And eventually my drinking caught up to me. I had a couple 5150s, homicidal, suicidal behavior, acting out. And then I met, I went on another deployment. This one was a MEU, 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit. We went to the Middle East, but it was on ships. So we did Hong Kong, Singapore, Dukem, all over out there. And I mean, at every port, I don't know how I didn't get in trouble with my drinking was so bad. Like I was just walking a thin line, and somehow I made it back from that deployment without getting in trouble. And then I had met my, who's now my third ex-wife. She was from Colorado, but I flew out to a wedding in Denver and invited her. It was a childhood friend's wedding, and I invited her, and we hooked up, and I flew her out to California, and we ended up getting married. But that was a super toxic relationship, and you know, crazy stories. There was a standoff that she had with the police. I'd been drinking and I used to drink with my pistol to my head, like, because after Chris killed himself, I would drink with my pistol always loaded right there next to me. And I had it to my head one day and I set it down, and I've never negligent discharged in my entire life. I set it down and it went off and it went through the wall. And it happened to, you know, it happened to go in the neighbor's pillow, who just so happened to be an NCIS agent, but he was off for 4 days. So yeah, that caught up to me. And that's part of the trouble that I got into. But ultimately what got me kicked out of the Marine Corps was my drinking. Like I finally asked for help and went to rehab. And during this time, Mike, Chris's brother, he had been very supportive of me. But during this time, he passed away from huffing air duster. He used to do that. And he had a heart attack from that. And I stayed sober through that. I went to his funeral. I stayed sober. And then I got arrested for that round that went through the wall 6 months earlier. With federal marshals arrested me with $100,000 bond, and I bonded out and I relapsed. I drank after not drinking for so long. I drank and I was back in jail within 24 hours. You know, it didn't take long. But I ended up getting kicked out for threatening to kill the sergeant major and CO. I was a crazy drinker. I don't remember. I'd black out. I don't remember what I would do or say. And so, yeah, that's how the wheels kind of fell off for me.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm so sorry that, you know, you went through all that. But, you know, I'm glad that, you know, you found your way back. And yeah, you're doing better things. You're making, you know, a better way for yourself. Like, I know that all of that was definitely hard. I can't even begin to even imagine how much, you know, you went through. And like, would you consider that some of the stuff that you experienced would be like PTSD as well, or?
Yeah, I think PTSD and substance abuse kind of go hand in hand for a lot of people. And I've told people before, like I do a lot of groups because I'm still finishing up probation, and I've been in and out of like so many different counselors and therapies, which is a good thing. But one of the things that I recognize and tell people is I think everybody has some degree of PTSD, right? Like what's the most traumatic event for them? Obviously there's severities in different degrees. Like when Chris would have an episode, I mean, it was full blown panic attack. Like he flipped the fuck out on people for no reason. And it was pretty insane. That's severe PTSD. Where it's like absolutely unmanageable. Like he needed meds to be able to handle those panic attacks. And most people, I think, though, it's just a moderate level. And that's how I feel. But and even my relationship, my last marriage, I think, has given me PTSD and all the involvement with police. But one of the trainings, counselings I've been to, they termed it different. Instead of coining it as post-traumatic stress, it can be post-traumatic growth, right? Like turn your negativity into positivity, your lead into gold, lemons into lemonade, however you want to put that. It's an opportunity to grow out of it and be better than you were before.
Yeah, absolutely. No, definitely. Trying to improve your skincare game? Guess what? I got a little something for you. You can improve the health of your skincare with the Vogue approved. Yes, you heard that right. Vogue as in Vogue magazines, the models. Yes, that Vogue. The Vogue approved beauty product, Herbal Face Food, the most potent anti-aging, multi-correction skincare product on the market. Yes. So hit that link in the show notes or video description and use our code SPHFF to get 20% off at checkout. Visit herbalfacefood.com to get started. That's herbalfacefood.com. All right. And use code S as in Sam, P as in pineapple, H as in Henry, F as in Frank, F as in Frank to get 20% off at checkout. That's SPHFF to get 20% off. All right. Herbalfacefood.com. Okay. Y'all got the hookup. So let them know that Situations Podcast sent you. All right. You know, even though like, you know, like, so through all of this, you had a transition and you said it was like a 7-year long struggle. Can you tell me more about this transition and what went into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I got out in 2016, December, well, my ex-wife, she got pregnant at like the timing was right around when Mike died, which is crazy. And she had been using before that and had a suicide attempt. She tried to kill herself and took like 60 Xanax. Like she shouldn't be here. But I had this weird feeling, and I was going to AA at the time. And my friend Gabe Lockman, he knew the sheriffs in Ramona. So he asked, do you want me to tell the police to force entry? And I was like, yeah, I just had this feeling. And they did. And anyways, they took her to the hospital at the time, and they found out she was 2 weeks pregnant while she was in there, which is crazy because you don't find out you're pregnant at 2 weeks. But it was a high risk pregnancy. The Marine Corps promised that I would still have health care for her when I got out. I had nowhere to go, no money saved up. She's, you know, 7 months pregnant. So, and then I when I got out, I got prescribed Adderall, and it went, my addiction went back to what it was before the Marine Corps, to meth right away. So I was living with a friend in Denver, same childhood friend whose wedding I was at, and I met, took my ex-wife, and I was living with him, and just struggle after struggle, like we had the baby, and we didn't even have the money for the circumcision, which is elective surgery. The car got totaled with a hail damage, like everything bad that could happen. And then DHS got involved because he had complications with recovering from his circumcision, because it was like 31 days later when he did it, but he had complications, and DHS got involved in Denver at that time. And then my friend and I had kind of a falling out. He was trying to get back with his wife, who he had separated with, and he basically kind of left us hanging, because he was the one, it was his name, and he was paying rent, but he kind of just up and just bounced and didn't talk to us anymore. So we got evicted with the brand new baby, nowhere to go. So we moved to Colorado Springs. My buddy had a tattoo shop, and like we were staying in there with the baby and everything. Like just horrible situation. It was just from hotel to hotel, horrible way to live, especially with the baby. And just the using got worse, and the fighting and arguments and toxicity just continued to get worse and worse. And finally, like, and I had gotten some more charges, and, you know, my life was so unmanageable that I couldn't be compliant with probation, and I missed a court date. So I went on the run for the first time for a few months, was blessed by some veterans organization to help me find a place. Even though while the cops were looking for me, I found a place in Lahana, and we got a house. I turned myself in, did a walkthrough bond, and was getting everything to get ready back on track. But then we had another incident, and the cops came, and we both got arrested, and DHS took our son. It took a year to get him back. But that's kind of the start of where I decided, like, trying to get my life back on track. And there was a lot of ups and downs, a lot of relapses. But took a year to get Henry back from DHS. And through that time, he stayed with my sister-in-law. And on Easter of 2018, she was in Pueblo and got hit by a drunk driver who crossed over and hit her full blast. And if you'd seen the vehicle, like, there's no way anybody should have walked away from that. So, like, my life over and over, there's so many situations where, like, you can see God's hand. He absolutely protected and helped us, like, saved our lives. And because of that, my sister-in-law could no longer take care of him, so he had to go to a foster home for a little bit. So that was, it was really hard. And it was even harder to get him back than most of the other families we would see at court, because they had, like, an expedited program for some of them, and we were doing everything we're supposed to. But because I was a veteran and PTSD and that mental health issues, it actually made it harder to get him back. There was a lot more work that had to be done. I mean, my lawyer ended up telling me, like, I've been doing this 20 years, and I've never seen anybody put in as much work as you did. I had a binder that I'd carry in all the classes I did, and 60 jobs I applied for, and, you know, getting sober then. And we got him back. We won him back. And then we moved into an apartment together, and she got pregnant again. And more toxic issues. It ended up not working out. Like, right around COVID, I think, when we separated, I got arrested again. And during COVID, I had nowhere to go. So it was like, either go to the trap house or go to my brother's, who just told me that he just tested positive for COVID. So I was like, well, let's get it over with. If it's going to kill me, let's do it now. And so I moved in with my brother in Aurora. And yeah, the journey went on, man.
Wow.
Yeah, so from Denver, I lived with my brother in Denver for a little bit. And that was a real struggle. Like, that's when I started my business. I was doing part-time, doing lawn aeration and fertilizer. So I'd drive all over the city, Springs, Denver, Pueblo, everywhere. I built about 300 or 400 customers over the years, but just not taking care of myself, my health, you know, and it all really fell apart for me until, like, I'd moved to Canyon City, back to Rocky Ford, lots of moves in the process. and different people, burning bridges along the way. And then in October, I was driving back to Canyon City after doing jobs in Pueblo in my truck, and I got hit by a semi. I rolled three times, had the aerators in it, walked away from it somehow. And again, I had my speaker, portable speaker, because I had no radio, and I was playing Kingdom Music. It's a Christian rap group, and the only thing I could hear when I came to was them still going, and I was like, all right, cool, and I had that just that dump of adrenaline from the wreck, and I was looking the whole time. I was looking for cigarettes. I kept asking the cop for a lighter, and he was just like, I don't got a lighter, man. But he's like, what happened? And I was like, Jesus Christ, man. That's what I wrote on the statement. I literally wrote Jesus Christ. Like, that's what happened. And he's like, yeah, you're not lying, man. And because of that wreck, I ended up later on, after I came out of treatment, I ended up getting 200 and some thousand. It paid off $86,000 in child support debt, put me back on my feet. It was just a huge blessing, but I didn't start really getting the help I needed until I went to, in 2021, to Sheridan, Wyoming. It was a 7-week program for veterans. And right before that, I mean, I was so down and out. I was homeless in Denver, IV meth use, and just burning all the bridges. I'm renting a vehicle from Turo every week just to have a vehicle while I'm renting an aerator from Home Depot. So I'm all the work that I'm doing 24/7 is not even enough to eat. It's just enough to pay these things that I'm renting. But it was just, I was trying to prove to myself I could still take care of my customers, which I did. But the wheels fell off big time, and I burned all my bridges and ended up at that treatment center, which is a godsend. God showed up there for sure. I met some amazing people. You could feed deer out of your hand there. It's right by Montana, but Wyoming is beautiful. Such a healing place. I met my friend Silent Crow there and Patricia. And I found something. I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and just wake up and then read my YouVersion, read my scripture for the day, and then pray for God to open the eyes of my heart and see how I could be of service to other people. And then I would listen, because in order to smoke a cigarette there, you had to walk a mile to walk off campus. So I walked 500 miles while I was there, but I would walk in the morning. It was negative 17 degrees, and I would walk out there to smoke a cigarette. And something happened. God showed up there, and that's really a big change in my life right there, was when that happened.
Wow. Yeah. And the treatment in 2021 and 2022, was that kind of around the same time that were kind of trying to, I guess, go through Oxford House? Is that kind of how that all tied in as well?
Okay. So once I showed up to treatment and I waved that white flag of surrender, I need help. God started showing up immediately. Me and my mom kind of had a falling out prior to me going up there. But then, I think second week there, she's like, I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah. And I was wondering where I'm going to live when I got out of there. And she's like, have you heard of Oxford House? She told me about it. And she told me, so I looked it up, and there's one in Pueblo that actually had vacancies, and it had for men in children's house. So not only can the adult live there, but also with his children. So I did an interview right away, and it went extremely well. That was the second week there. It went extremely well. They accepted me. So I already had a place locked in for 5 weeks later when I got out of treatment with a bunch of guys. And when I left treatment, I showed up to the Oxford House, and I got to meet amazing, amazing group of guys, man. And my friend Alan, he's still sober to this day. He just did his testimony at Celebrate Recovery the other night, and he's met his wife through the program, and he's still got full custody of his son. I met him there and Justin and some other guys, Ruben, just an amazing group of guys all coming together. At this point in our lives where we needed help, there was such good camaraderie. But there was tragedy there too. There was this kid, Chris, living at the house, and he'd work at McDonald's, and really cool kid, just kind of quiet. But, we have to do weekly meetings, and they do UAs at meetings sometimes. It's house run, but if we ever suspect somebody's using, it's UA on the spot. But I was going to church, this praise assembly in Pueblo, and celebrate recovery all the time. And Chris would ask me sometimes, like, I would invite him. I'd invite everybody at the house, and like, nobody would show up a lot of times. But that night, after the house meeting, Chris asked me, like, what do I have to do to get baptized? And I said, you know, it's a Good Friday show that we're doing on a Good Friday. We're doing like this presentation. I was going to play a Roman soldier or whatever, but he was like, I want to get baptized. And then that's the last time I saw him. He went down to his room, and I was visiting a friend the next day, but Alan found him downstairs. He had been dead for 24 hours already. He had he had taken fentanyl. I guess a lot of times when people relapse like that, it's when they're doing good, or they're hopeful about something, like they're celebratory. And with that stuff, it's so dangerous. You don't, one time could be all that it takes, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
I met so many people and have friends that, like, I have a friend that lost her 13-year-old son to fentanyl. And, like, you know what I mean? Not even, I don't think he was even, deliberate on his end.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's a epidemic for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, you ended up finding God, and you ended up finding employment. You know, tell me more, you know, about that. Cause you did kind of like mention like a little bit about how, yeah, you know, you, all of these experiences that you went through, especially even like that accident, and, you know, you still hear the Christian rap playing in the background, you know, he's like, you're getting all of these signs. So yeah. How did you find God? And then, how did you find that employment?
Okay. So I had my business still that I was doing at the time while I was at the Oxford House. That was in 2021. And to be honest, there was a couple slip-ups. There was a couple slip-ups during that time. I moved my brother in with me. He was living in Austria. I got him a place to stay. So he moved in with us. And we were trying to get out on our own and move to Lahana. So we did. And when I did, I started smoking weed again, trying to use the medical marijuana excuse. So I think that lowered my resistance to relapse for sure. It makes it easier. But during that time, I'll talk about, I think, the devil got me with always has been my temptation, you know, as women. And so like sex and drug use, they go hand in hand, and I relapsed on that. I hooked up with this chick and then ended up using again. And I beat myself up about it too, because not only did I relapse, but this chick was married, you know, it was the wrong thing to do. Like, and I'd be with her and she'd be talking about what a good dude her husband is. And I was just like, this is so wrong, dude. You know, like, oh my God, something wrong with me. And, I kept beating myself up, and I'd get sober for like 3 weeks and then relapse again. That went on, that went on until last year, when I finally, because I thought I'm going to have to go to a program again in order to get sober. I thought that's what it was going to take. But I started showing back up to Celebrate Recovery in Pueblo and going to here in Swink. And God told me, no, like you can find recovery here. You don't, you know what I mean? I can do it here. I already have full custody of my kids. Like I can't afford to go to a program, you know? So I need to be able to do it here. So I just prayed for that. So like when that happened, when I slipped up and hooked up with this chick, I felt like I try to look back on inside and see like, why did I do it? And I think it was, part of it is because I didn't feel like I deserved all the blessings I was getting. Like I got blessing after blessing after blessing after blessing on top of like 13 grand that I wasn't expecting from unemployment back pay, the $267,000, the $86,000 child support debt paid off, like two more vehicles, helping people. I didn't spend my money all that wise. I helped people out. So I didn't feel worthy of all the blessings that I was getting. And I think that's part of it. Like in recovery, we have to learn to build our value back up and see ourselves through God's eyes. So I like lost that favor, I think, from God during that time because of the choices I was making. And then it would be easy to relapse and hook up with a chick again and use over it. And I kept praying and praying and praying and asking for that same power, that same connection, that same fervor for God that I had when I was at treatment. And then just recently, I think starting in November, December is when it really, it started to happen again. Like I'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning, no matter how tired, sometimes at 1:30, having like prophetic dreams, crazy dreams of preaching. And I would wake up and just do the same thing. I reestablished that stability, like started reading my scripture again in the morning and then worship instead of spending all this time depressed and smoking weed and sleeping and watching TV. Like I'm busy. Like I'm back in the gym in the morning, you know, like I'm up, I do an AA meeting at 6:30 in the morning, Monday through Friday, while I'm getting the kids ready. And then I take them to school. And then I what's different in my recovery is that I submitted to having a sponsor. You know, that's a huge thing. And that's like somebody who's already got it. He's got 7 or 8 years. He's a Christian. And he's got 7 or 8 years of sobriety, longer than that from meth, but I think 7 or 8 from alcohol. And he's got, you know, a great marriage. So I submitted. Part of it is I got to submit to him. So like any decisions that I'm making, big decisions, I've got to run by him. If it's not a good idea, then I probably shouldn't do it. And like actually submitting and listening. And he is like, you know, suggested that, that I get a job. And he said that they have a opening for a peer recovery specialist, that it would be good for my recovery and I'd probably be good at it. And I put in for it and, I got the job and like, I worked my first week last week and it's phenomenal. Like so far, I love it. It's like right in line with my goals. It's like being at an AA meeting all day, you know, like I get to help listen to some people just need to hear someone like have somebody listen to them, what they're going through. They're having a bad day. They need someone to show them that love. Like all this is about is sharing the love that God gave us, like that he gave us. Like when I do that and my sponsor taught me, like when I'm of service to other people, then my life starts to get better. Like he said, the biggest blessings come from this. Like this is the biggest thing I learned. Help somebody else without expecting anything at all in return. But then here's the hard part. Here's the really hard part. And everybody messes it up. Keep it a secret. Don't tell nobody about it. Try to do it. It's hard. You want to be like, yeah, you're excited about it. You want to tell everybody. And it's not like, it's really about your heart. Are you doing it for the attention? Because you see people on YouTube videos give like, oh, a charity. And they're like recording. Yeah. What is it? It's not about, now it's not even about that. Like, and God says you've already received your blessing. Like you've already received it when you're doing it for to boast and get opinions of like praise from others. But when you do it, when you do it in secret, God will reward you in public. And he has been. Like I'm under contract for this house. I didn't think I'd ever be able to buy a house. My credit would be better. I'm getting $10,000 back out of nowhere from an earplug settlement from 3M. So that's going to help out. You know, get a new vehicle, like, and working on getting my other two kids back in my life and come out for spring break. So I know I got a lot to rebuild, but things are better now than they've ever been. And I feel more confident and secure in my recovery this time than I ever have been.
Wow. That is just so amazing, Henry. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, can you do me a really quick favor? Can you please rate and review this podcast? Hit that 5-star review, because, and I do read all the reviews because this helps me know how this podcast is helping others and how, you know, this podcast is serving you, because this, my job as a host is to serve you this podcast the way that you would prefer it to be. You wrote a book called 10 Rules to Succeed like a Marine. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like what led to you writing that? And yeah, what goes into being an author?
Good question. So I've always written my goals down. I have these little daily sheets that I do. On like one side, it has like stuff to do for the day, calls I got to make, appointments I got to be at. The other side is like 5 things I'm grateful for, people to pray for, and then 5 short and long-term goals. And what I found out, this was from doing prepaid legal back in the day when I was in the Marine Corps, like being an entrepreneur, being in multi-level marketing where you're reading good books every day to make yourself better. You're listening to good audios to better yourself, to sharpen your skills, to get out of your comfort zone. And one of the things I had heard was that people who write their goals down, they did a study of like, I think it was Yale. They did a study and told all these kids graduating class to write their goals down. And they did, came back 20 years later to come back and look at them. And I think like 95% of them didn't write their goals down. 5% did. And the 5% who did, their lives, not just financially, they were like 100 times better than the people who didn't, like relationship wise, spiritually, physically, everything. So like that just shows you the power of putting your goals on paper. So I started to do that even while I was in the Marine Corps. Like I did that, and that transferred into like, I've been doing it. And there's times like when I was using, I would slip up and not do it, obviously, because I realize it's not going to happen. But I've kept a pretty consistent, like 80-90% of the time I've been doing that. And when I was at treatment, I wrote down, I'm going to write a book, you know, like by this date. And it does have to be time specific. And what's crazy is what happened. Like, it's like the world will rearrange itself to make sure that you're like that your goals will happen. So like while I was living at Oxford House, I was working for this lady, Crystal, who has a carpet cleaning business and air duct cleaning business, like making some money on the side. She's a good friend of mine. And she knew my heart, my spirit. Like, so she gave me this book. I was at her house talking to her, and she gave me this book about how to write a book in like 30 days or whatever it was. And I just took that formula and I applied it. And like, I think it was like 45 days I was done. But the process was like, you can do 15, 30 minutes, put some music on, and then you'll just kind of like free write, right? So like kind of ideas of what you think you want to write, but just random words all together. Doesn't need to be any assemblance, any kind of connection. Then the second round is like, you do the same thing, play some good music, kind of be in a good headspace. And these probably were like 45 minute sessions for me, honestly. But then you do like word. I don't remember if you do mind mapping, like you do like a word with a circle around it and draw another one with a circle around it, the different things connected. So you do that, and then you'll break it down. The next little iteration is to break it down into themes. Like, what are the themes of the book? So like 4 to 6. So I put it on a poster board, 4 to 6 themes, broke down the stuff from the last one, put it over there. And then the last process is you break it down into an outline. Like after you have that, because once you do the themes, you have your chapters. And then when you break it down into the outline, now you've got the format of the entire thing. So then you look up nonfiction book, needs to be 26,000 words at the minimum. Cool. So 26,000 divided by however many chapters, I got to do 1,200 words a day. Simple. You know what I mean? And once you just sit down and start, it doesn't need to be perfect. Doesn't matter if you feel like writing, but you just sit down and grind on it, do it every day, whether you feel like it or not, because you can fix it later. And then at the end of it, you have your rough draft done. The first part's done. And then the first book I did, I enlisted the help of a good friend. He's another Marine entrepreneur, as well as an immigrant. He's written 13 books. He's a phenomenal dude, Obon Bowen. He's a life coach, marriage trainer. He does so much stuff. But he's the one that helped me to get my book out there. The editing of it, the pagination, like hooked me up with another dude. So I connected with him to make that happen, to make it a reality. So it's on Amazon, and I have like 300 more hard copies. And now I did a radio show, a couple radio shows, a couple podcasts. They got me set up for a couple booths at some places. So opportunities to sell those books as well as Amazon. And then I'm continuing to write. I wrote my second book, Wake Up and Fight, which is basically like my life story. And that one, it's been done for a while, but the rough draft, but I've been hesitant to release it because of how sensitive everything is. And like, I'm going to have to change names so I don't get sued. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
and some of it, you know, I might be glorifying, based on where I was at in my recovery, I might be glorifying the wrong thing. As the Holy Spirit and God continues to work on me, there's things that I'm like, man, I shouldn't be, you know, glorifying that. That's bad. You know what I'm saying? And I need to work on that, like as God continues to refine me. So that one's in the process. And right now I've been doing I started in January. So I'm like on February 3rd or 4th, every day I do two daily devotionals for a 365 daily devotional for Christians. So I'll do like a scripture, a little blurb about it, and then prayer. So like one being like, God is a chain user. And people are like, what's that mean? Like, so God can break your chains of addiction, whether it's pornography, you know, a meth addiction, alcohol addiction, a phone addiction. Like, people are addicted to their phone. Whatever it is, people are in bondage. Like, everybody's in some kind of bondage, but God can break that. And what's crazy is not only can he use those, not only does he break those chains from you, but he'll allow you to use those chains to pull other people out of the darkness. So, like, there is a purpose behind your pain. There's treasure out of your out of your tribulations. There's treasure there on the other end of that. And it's crazy. Like, my first sponsor, when I did the fifth step with them, you write an inventory and you end up sharing all this dark stuff. You're only as sick as your secrets. You share all this stuff with your sponsor and God. And like, when you get it off your chest, like, something amazing happens. There's just relief. You know what I mean? Like, but one of the things that was crazy is I don't think there's any coincidences. And he told me, you know, what's crazy is not only you, but what happened to you as a child, what happened to me being molested as a child, like, everybody I was sponsored had that same issue. Like, isn't that weird? That's super crazy. Like, that's God, bro. Like, that's God in the program using his pain and his sobriety and how he's gotten over it to help somebody else get through that. Because that can keep you in bondage forever. That can mess up relationships, your sex life for a lot. You know what I mean? And a lot of people are afraid to talk about it, especially men. Men don't, our culture's kind of getting away from it now, but most men don't want to talk about their feelings. They want to talk about their past issues. Like, you know, but it's necessary if we want to thrive. Like, we've got to recognize what's wrong with us in order to fix it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Situations podcast is an open platform covering dating, relationships, mental and emotional life experiences. If you are looking to advertise your brand or product, or would like to sponsor the show, send an email to situationspod@gmail.com. That's situationspod@gmail.com.
So let's talk about that third book. You know, you're working on a third book, a 365 daily devotional for recovering addicts and Christians. So this one, This one's in development.
Yes, sir. It's a work in progress. You know, the good thing about it, though, is I get to use it. So, like, it challenged me to not only read scripture for the day, but to dwell on, meditate on it, think about it, pray about it, ask God to show me how I can use it and be useful in my life. But then I have to write on it every day. So, you know, it keeps me accountable. But not only, like, I'll write them at night before I go to bed. And then in the morning, I send them out to, now, like, the group's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And some of these people are now, last night for my birthday, all, like, I had like a following at CR. There was like seven people that were there. And it's a small town as a result of, like, mine continuing to encourage them with God's word. It's not me, it's God, you know, just working through me. But like, a lot of people are thanking me for it. You know, thank you. Even my ex-girlfriend who I've been trying to reconnect with, you know, and we'll get to that. My ex-girlfriend who I've been trying to, like, she's the one I think that got away, but she's not a Christian. And she's still putting, like, she's still like, thank you for sending these. And she's giving me input into them. And I don't know, I'm hoping maybe eventually God will continue to work on her heart and soften it. And maybe, you know, she will come this way as well.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. Like, you know, it sounds like, you know, you're on the up and up. You're finding your way. You're writing a book. You're sharing your story. I think it's important to just share powerful stories like this. So I appreciate you doing that. Do you have any, like, I guess, like, as far as like qualities, are there like certain qualities that you look for in a partner?
Yeah. Before I didn't, you know, like, before, honestly, it was all physical attraction. I didn't, like, I'm not gonna lie. That's kind of, there's like dudes that had, like, there's very few Marines who had wives that they could last their marriage, like, through a career. Like first sergeant and his wife, like, I really there's a part of me that's like, man, that's fucking amazing. Like, that she stayed with him. She took care of the house while he was gone. Like, neither one of them cheated on each other, like, through all that. And that's rare, rare, rare. But there's a few guys I looked up to like that. And I was like, I wanted a marriage like that, a relationship like that. And like another one is Obam. I watched him change and like the relationship he has with his wife now, he courts her all the time. She has more shoes than anybody. He courts her all the time. Like he got on his knees and sang, I swear in Cabo San Lucas in front of everybody, man. And I was like, I can't sing, but like, I would love to be able to do something like that. Like just boldly confessing his love in front of, you know what I mean? Women love that type of stuff. But as far as qualities, I would say the biggest thing for me this time, like I'm staying celibate right now. Like that's my plan as part of my recovery. That's the one thing that's different as well. Because I don't want to be sidetracked again and until I'm ready. I'm going through a step study. It's 9 months. I just started, and that's going through the steps of AA, but through celibate recovery, which is Christ-centered. So you're working on all those past issues that are going to come. You're working through all that with another person. It's guiding you through it. God's guiding you through it. And it's on a weekly basis. But so my prayer and my goal is to find somebody. Now when a lot of women who take this the wrong way, the Bible says to have a woman that submits to you. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. Actually, if a woman properly submits a wife to her husband, she empowers and leads her men. You know what I'm saying? And that's actually like I was the best man at one of my friend's weddings. And I remember saying like that she's the head that turns, he's the head of the family, but she's the neck that turns the head to go in whatever direction it's supposed to go. Right. And I don't know where I stole that from, but somebody, you know what I'm saying? Like, never lie, cheat, and steal. The one from Hitch, I use that part too. But yeah, absolutely. I want to have a empowering relationship where we both we're friends first, right? Like to be actual friends first and not make it about sex, because that's what it seems to be all about these days. It'll ruin relationship to actually get married without having sex first. I don't know that I can do it, you know, but I'm planning, I'm trying. Our culture doesn't promote that. But to have somebody like that's good with my kids, that puts their welfare first, you know what I mean? That's able to tell me and redirect me, encourage me. Men, we need respect. Like women, a lot of like that's a huge thing. Women need to feel safe and protected, and men need respect. If we don't have that, then you know, like both sides tend to stray and find it elsewhere.
Right. Absolutely. And kind of just, you know, adding on to that. So like, what do you think are keys to a successful relationship? Because I think it's kind of go hand in hand with some of the things that you were just saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, being in all these counseling and therapies that I have to do, it's a good thing. Cause it's like my sponsor says, it's a training ground. Like right now, like, yeah, it sucks. I have to wait, and it sucks. It gets lonely, but it's a training ground. It's preparing me like for when that time comes, right? Like, so one of those things is boundaries. I never enforced boundaries before. No, assertive communication, not passive aggressive, not aggressive, not passive, but assertive. You know, you're setting proper boundaries, like everything, finances, like even to the finances, like it's ours together. We don't spend money without talking about it together. Like that's a big issue. You know, like being on the same page when it comes to, even when it comes to sex and like who you're allowed to hang around with, like it's like when people get to the point, and I've been in that so toxic of a relationship where like, but you're going through each other's phone, there's no relationship. Like, but if you feel like you've got to go through each other's phone, there's no trust, there's no relationship. Like it's pointless. And it's horrible to try to keep going. Like one person's accusing the other one. Well, you know, the one that's pointing the fingers is generally the one cheating, you know, half the time. I don't know. I've been through both. I've been the bad guy and the good guy, you know, not the good guy, but I've been the bad guy and the one that's had bad happen too. So, and I'm not innocent, but I think it takes two people and it takes a lot of work. Like I had a pastor that said, like, it's like a triangle. God's at the top and you two are down here. And as you get closer to God, you get closer to each other. But if only one gets closer, you become unequally yoked. So I think putting God in the center of it is key for me in the future. And then continuing to work on that, like going to marriage retreats, like just like my recovery needs to be worked on. It's not like one time and you're done. It's a constant. it's got to be worked on a daily continual basis in order to strengthen it. Cause you're going to go through struggles and trials in a relationship. Like if you want a long marriage, you're going to go through a lot together and it'll make you stronger. I've watched people do that. Like, and I look up to that. I've watched people who've gone through that and become out stronger on the other end when they thought they were about to get a divorce. And that's rare too. Cause nowadays, what do people do? It's so easy to quit. And people move in. Like, that's another thing. People move in together and start sleeping with each other before they're married. And then it's like we're raised in this culture where it's easy to quit and just find somebody else. Like that's the culture, what our culture is promoting. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're definitely onto something. Yeah, because especially the way social media works and how dating apps have evolved is like, oh, I got all these options. I don't like this one thing about this person. I'm going to just go find it on the apps.
Right. And you know what I really like? So I learned a lot from like my pastor from a few years ago. He moved away. He was younger, but I've always had the mentality like there's never anyone too young to teach and you're never too old to learn. So like, I try to stay humble and coachable, but like one thing I really liked about him that I never seen anybody do and that I'm going to practice when I get in a relationship again is like, he won't be in a room with another female by himself, period. Or like even in a car by himself, like just don't allow open doors. There's no room for it. There's no need for it. Right. Why even allow that? You know what I'm saying? Might sound a little over the top, but it's really not. Like it's respecting your wife.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely a good way to put it. Yeah. No, like, this is definitely such insightful information and everything that you've been sharing so far and about your life and your story. Hoorah.
Hoorah, Aaron. Thank you.
All right, so we got a couple of hinged or unhinged dating app prompts that listeners submitted. So do you want to unpack some of those with me?
Sure. I don't know how this goes, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and basically what it is so, you know, on different dating apps, what listeners will do, if somebody is putting something like crazy on their dating app, someone will take it, like, you know, my listeners, they'll take a screenshot of it and submit it to the show, like, hey, this person sent this, like, does this make sense? Or, hey, this person sent this, like, am I, like, crazy or is this the red flag? So it's kind of like a red flag deal breaker. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So this first one says, first round is on me if you bring your dog. Is this hinged as in, you know, green flag or unhinged as in red flag deal breaker?
Yeah, that's a red flag, man. maybe dog lovers really like, you know, maybe it's dog lover. Like, I don't know. Maybe if they both really love dogs, then it's not.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna say hinge because if somebody brings a dog on a date, I feel like maybe that'll kind of make the date even more fun having a dog there. I don't know. All right, the second one says you should not go out with me if you're not a morning person. So if someone's not a morning person, they're saying, don't go out with me because if you ain't a morning person, I don't want you around. Is this hinged or unhinged?
No, I'm going to say hinged because like if a person really knows that they're a morning person and someone's really not, then like that's hard to get. I used to not be. I used to hate the mornings, but I am now. So I don't know. I think you can learn to become one, like, but it's not like, you know, if you have to change for somebody getting in a relationship, it generally doesn't work. But if you're already changed to be that person, then it would work.
Yeah. I agree. This one is definitely hinge. It's like, you know, yeah, if this person knows what they want. They want a morning person. So it's like, if you're not a morning person, I guess maybe, you know, find somebody else. And I knew this one.
Yeah.
I knew this one would resonate with you because, you know, being like a Marine, and once a Marine, I'm always a Marine. So, you know, like waking up is like in the morning is like part of like your identity.
Absolutely, yeah. We usually do more in the morning than most people do all day, you know?
Exactly. Only easy day was yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, so this last one says, what if I told you that I'll watch sports with you get you a beer when you're ready for another, and hold it for you while you jump and cheer like a girl when your team scores. So this person is like a ride or die. What do you think? Is this hinged or unhinged?
Yeah, that's hinged. Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. I like to see people in relationships like that as well, where somebody's like, they don't even have to be a fan, but they love their partner so much that they're like willing to love what they love. That's love right there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. That's hinged. Like she sounds like such a joy. So I hope that one works out. All right, Henry, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on to the show, sharing your story and all the good things. I really appreciate you, really.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. It's been an honor and a blessing.
Yeah, and I'm excited for, you know, like your books to come out. And you know what? You should definitely start a podcast because you have quite a story. I feel like that would resonate so well, if you started your own podcast.
We were going to do, I was going to do one down here with a friend of mine who got paralyzed by the police called The Elephant in the Valley instead of The Elephant in the Room. Like, we talk about the things that people don't want to talk about. But I just, the only reason I'm hesitant is because I'm so busy right now and I don't know what all goes behind starting it up and how that works.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything that fast, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. No, for sure. Well, maybe down the line, you know, once you, you know, like get more help and like, you know, you maybe get an assistant, who knows? Like, yeah, I'll manifest it for you.
Yeah. Right on, brother.
So can you tell our listeners how they can stay in touch with you and like any links that you want to share? Tell us like how we can find you and connect.
Yeah, I'll send you the link for my books on Amazon, on Facebook. I don't really do TikTok much, or Instagram, but Facebook pretty much is the only social media that I use. And you can find my book on Amazon, and my other ones will be there as well whenever they're actually released and finished.
All right. Sounds good. Well, for all of you listening, there are three ways that you can submit to the show. Situationspodcast.com/submit. The second way, you can call the hotline, 312-586-2664. It's an automated hotline system. You leave your voice message there and we'll play it on the show and unpack it. The third way is to email us, situationspod@gmail.com. All right. Now, if you're in a bus, a plane, a train, hey, even if you're, you know, Henry's former, a former colleague, you know, like wherever, or you know, could be one of his Marine buddies, you could take Situations Podcast with you wherever you go. All right. So I want to say thank you all again for listening. Henry, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it, brother. Thank you again for your service.
Thank you.
And yeah, I will see you all back here for the next episode in a couple of weeks. Woo!